This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
9 p.m. Again, the Prison Reform Film Festival 2008 happens August 15th through 17th at Rice Cinema on the campus of Rice University. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Oh, well, David, he told the high sheriff, says I hang on.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
This is Brian Levinka.
And on tonight's program, Joan Devlin will be joining us from Iowa to interview author Paul Fisher. He's the author of a book about homosexuality, depression, alcoholism, and female oppression in the Jones family. Brian Levinka and Jack Valensky will talk with Carrie Pope from the Bering Omega Center about programs being offered there. The folks from SNAP, the Spay-Neuter Assistance Program, will be here to talk about a special part of SNAP set up to assist people living with HIV/AIDS to care for their animal companions. And our regular features this way out, including News Wrap. But first, it's everybody's favorite poet, Donna Garrett. And joining her in the studio is Jim Shade.
And Jennifer Renee. Yes, that's who's here. Hi, Donna. Hi, Jim. I understand. I know we're going to hear some of your poetry, which is just, you've got a treat coming tonight, so just hang in there, y'all. But there's an event coming up at Jim's shop, and it's Jim's Shade. And tell us where your shop is so we'll know what we're talking about.
We're having a Christmas in July, so please come by. We're at 3838 North Shepherd. It's Bead Atelier, and we have several local artists that's going to present some of their bead work. And we're going to have paintings, cocktails, and hors d'oeuvres, and carolers. So please come by.
It's on the 25th
of July,
6 p.m.
Yes, 6 to 9.
Okay.
And
all right,
featuring
good.
Our local international poet, Miss Donna Garrett.
Yes, Donna, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How's everybody out there in Houston? It's good to be
yeah,
here.
I heard them yell.
Aha.
I heard them. And what have you been up to?
Talk well, about I tell you, I've been relocating, so I'm finally stable now. I've been doing poetry. I read poetry out in Brenham, Texas this weekend.
Uh-huh.
I had a wonderful time. About 3 weeks ago, I was in Austin at MCC. Had a wonderful time. So
great.
And I'll be on the 25th of this month, which is Friday, at Jim Shade's Bead Atelier. And I'll be doing poetry. And I'm going to do a special rendition of The Night Before Christmas. I'm going to hook it up.
Night Before Christmas, a la
Donna Garrett. Of course, I'll be doing my own poetry in addition, but I'm going to end the night on that note.
So where did you get the idea of Christmas in July?
Well, you know,
I mean, I've heard of it before, but where did it come from for you?
Well, for me, usually by the time December 25th come by, I am Christmas burnout. And so this year I decided because I wanted to do something friend and give back to my customers. So I'm kind of throwing a trunk show for some of my friends.
Okay.
That have been helping me support my store. And it's become quite a nice little haven for artists, so we're trying to look for artists to come to our store because we have a nice space. We're looking for people to come and express themselves, and we're not afraid, so please don't be afraid.
Now, is there an age limit on this expression?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking about they'll have their artwork. Now, what kind of artwork are we talking about? Or is this, for the Christmas in July this Friday, but also in general, what kind of art do you show?
In our store, we have sculptures, paintings, photography. We have our resident artists, and we also have Miss Donna Garrett here, who is our resident poet. And I have added a few more to our roster. And in August 15th, Todd Bowman and I are going to do a two-man show, plus Miss Garrett. She's going to give us the voice.
Oh.
So we're going to have a sound and vision show.
And so this is another event. What's it called,
yes.
or is there a name for it?
Yes, it's going to be called The Art of Being.
Art of Being, and that's going to be when?
August 15th.
August 15th.
On a Saturday, so please come by for a great treat.
Oh, okay.
Visual, audio, and spoken.
Well, let's go back to Christmas in July, this coming Friday, everyone. You know, it's that's 4 days away.
6 o'clock.
And what do you have any new poetry you're going to read? Are you going to read some of your popular stuff? Or what do you have on the agenda so we can give them a little taste?
You know, I've just got some new stuff. I've got some old stuff. I've got a lot of stuff, you know. But and Jim has prepared this great amphitheater. That's what I call it. It's delightfully painted. It's like you're in a fishbowl. And so it's so fabulous. And so he's made this space available to me, so we'll be doing some things there. It's just nice. You got to come by and see it.
Okay.
It's like a glass menagerie.
Now, is this the first in a series you're going to do, or have you been doing this before, and this is just the first time we're getting the word out?
I have done this before, and this is the first time I'm getting the word out.
Okay.
And so in the future, I would like to do, like, lost and found objects and, you know, like a box show or anything. Even some things to even help our community, maybe something with the AIDS charity event, or even a dog show or a cotillion for our dogs.
Now, don't forget the cats.
And cats.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a cat person. I can't, you know. We girls like cats.
I've got some paintings in the hanging over the gym. Yes, I do. So go by and look at my paintings, my acrylics. Check them out.
And now I know you brought something to read, so I'm not going to. We teased them right at first. Let's read one of them and give us some of your talent, and then we'll go back to talking about the event.
I was wondering how I was feeling when I was coming in here. I said, now, what are you going to read, you know? And I went to Starbucks, and the young man said, well, can I tell you my passion? I looked at him. I said, yeah, put a lot of sugar in it. I'm going down to KPFT. So I picked a poem, and it's called Welcome.
I thought you'd already started.
No. No.
It's just that voice is so good.
That's right. I thought Starbucks is in it. It's KPFT. No. I love it.
It's called Welcome. Color me love. Integrate your lovely skin with mine. Come on in to me and make yourself at home. Cover me with your affection. Overheat my mental state of being. Rest, oh, rest inside of me. I readily extend myself because of my need, because of my love. Loneliness won't rest here if you stay. Keep smiling. It strengthens me and gives me hope. It elates my heart, it elevates my spirit, and draws my body to you.
Ooh.
Is this attraction? Is this thing I'm trying to verbalize what two people feel when the moon and emotions line up? My heart wants to love you. My need does not lead the way. I want to honor you for what you bring to my life. Thanks for your understanding. I was lost in my quest for love. I never saw you enter from the blind side of my psyche to come and overwhelm me. Stay here with me and receive everything your love has requisitioned from my heart. Loneliness is gone from me. And your love, your love has filled its place.
Oh. That was Donna Garrett. You turned in, and all of a sudden, what is that? That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's great. Great. Jim, in the event, you've got this new. How long have you had this location?
I've been here almost 2 years at
two
my
years.
New location.
And what was your inspiration to open the place and present it the way you have?
Well, I've worked for many years at the bead shop in Rice Village as their in-store designer and manager. And I felt like we had such a wonderful space, but there was never any giving back. And when I broke away and started my own business, I decided, well, gosh, I love to do art, and I know so many creative people that walk through my door that I try to push them forward. And now I'm trying to make them bring out their paintings from the closet and dust them off and show them in my store because I want to give them the opportunity.
That's great. Now, because you'd mentioned that earlier about that you're, it's a venue for that artist that just hasn't ever had anything shown. They've been piling them up in the closet, and maybe a few friends have seen them. You're saying, come on out. Come out. Okay.
Because I want it to be a haven for artists and musicians. You know, I don't want it just to be a bead shop. I want you to come and have a nice, unique experience and feel welcome. Sure. You know, we have chairs. We want you to be creative. You know.
Well, I'm assuming that the artwork shown is for sale.
Yes,
if people love it, fall in love with it, they
can
have it. Oh, you brought some with you. You can't see this on the radio, but it's beautiful.
And, you know, and some people, as Donna would say, they need to learn to let go. And a lot of us artists, we don't want to let go of our paintings and stuff. And you don't have to let go. You can bring it and share it with us and show us what you've been up to. And
yeah.
Give us an experience.
I just want to say that Jim is a great jewelry designer. Now, a lot of people have jewelry that they maybe have overworn, or maybe it's just broke, or something's missing, or you want to change the design. Hey, bring it by to Jim. He has a wonderful eye. He has every bead imaginable to man. You just got to come by and feel the energy.
Well, I'm in trouble. I've got a lot of those.
Exactly. You know, they're nice pieces. You just want them to look a little different. You want to add a different color, maybe. You know, just change it around. Jim is so wonderful. I mean, I always get my beads, and I wear a lot of beads.
Well, I've got some that, you know, I really loved, and the whole bit, and they broke, and maybe I had to collect the beads, and I have them in a little plastic bag.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And they have classes. You know, so, I mean, the classes, I'm like, I got a chance to learn how to twist wire properly.
We well, offer beading socials on Thursday.
Now, that is an art you need to learn, how to twist wire properly.
Yeah.
I'll remember that. So I didn't realize that. So you have classes and beading
work?
We
offer classes.
And then yeah,
we
tell
also,
us about that.
We offer a variety of classes, and most of our beading classes are real current jewelry making. And then, you know, we teach the basic stuff. And then we also have Thursday night social, and you get to BYOB, and you can interpret that any way you like. And we have a lot of
Bring
fun.
Your own bead, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, I have some ladies that come as far away as League City or Spring to come to our store. So it's been quite fun.
Really? How long have you been doing this?
This has been going on our third month, and last week was our record amount of people. It was like 12 ladies.
Came up here to learn, to
yes.
come to your classes.
And come to our
How
classes.
Would they find out about the classes?
They have either taken classes from me or word of mouth.
Oh, okay. You don't,
I've
you don't
been
have
talked
a,
to about
You don't
a
have
lot.
A website or
We
anything?
Do have a website.
Oh, you do? Okay,
yes,
why don't
ma'am.
You give it to
yes.
so that anybody that's interested in such things,
sure.
they can contact you.
I'm at www.beadatelier.com, and it's spelled BEADATELIER.com.
You better spell that again slower.
Okay. BEADATELIER.com.
Okay, good. Because, yeah. I mean, just the pronunciation might throw some people. This is Texas.
Yes, and in Texas, instead of atelier, you can call it atelier.
Atelier. Fair enough. Yeah, Donna?
Well, if you want to reach me, just email me. DG5001@sbcglobal.net.
Oh, you had to get in there. I thought
had to get in there.
You've got something else
yeah,
for us.
One more poem, because I want... This is a great, great community, and it's a lot of love here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to do is appreciate each other. So,
Amen.
Yeah, this next poem is all about appreciating each other. It's
well,
entitled,
let's hear it.
Yeah, Our Differences... I don't want to examine our differences. I want to embrace them. You came from there. I came from here. You were raised that way. I was raised this way. So what? We were both born and we will both die. We share the basic needs of survival and we both need love. The sun shines on our heads and the rain blesses the earth, providing the food we both need. You have learned from your culture and can teach me. We can exchange what we both know to be true, what life has shown us. Don't be afraid to know me. My differences don't overpower the things we share in common. My skin is just that, my skin. And you will have to get past it to see the light within.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. What was your inspiration for this?
Oh, I went to Asia,
mm-hmm.
and I was doing a show for Black History Month at Taipei American School in Taiwan.
Okay.
Taipei, Taiwan. And this is one of the pieces that just came to me after I arrived.
Mm.
I mean, everybody was so wonderful, and I was like, you know, we're so much, even though I don't speak the language, you know, the love, it carried me, you know, so...
So
and
it
the
went
poem
beyond
came
then.
Out. Of, yeah, the poem came out of just interacting with people. I sat down on a tree one day, and it just, hey, started talking.
Now, is that the way your inspiration comes, just out of an experience or something, or do you sit down and really work at it?
No, I never work at it.
Okay.
When the words come, sometimes I'm driving, I pull over. You know, I try to keep a record on me all the time.
I'm glad you don't text it or anything.
Yeah, you know? I'm not.
We want you around.
Now look at me now. You know I'm not that tech. I haven't upgraded yet.
Okay.
So, you know, inspiration comes from a lot of different things. You know, you can see something fluttering outside the window. Or it might be raining. Or just the way you feel. Or something someone says. You know, and you hear those words. You hear them. And they just... come out, you know. I leave myself open so that, hey, if there's something that around me that wants to speak up.
Now,
I invite the spirits.
And you keep a pad and pencil handy
yes.
to do that?
Yes.
Wherever
sure
you go, you've
right.
got one? Okay.
Because if you miss it, if it gets by you, it just may not come back. At least it doesn't for me all the time. I mean, more times than not, it doesn't come back around.
Now, I can see the inspiration for something like that, but do you scribble down something from that inspiration and then go back and work it, or does it flow like that complete?
No, sometimes I write and I might have 16 napkins, and I have to figure out, you know, okay, how does this go? Because I'm writing, you know, as it
right.
comes. I write on anything. I write on the windowsill. You know, anything that's close by, I try to keep a, like I said, recorder, so that when the words come to me, I can capture them and really try to see how they relate. You know, sometimes I write things that I've got a lot of stuff that I've never read aloud at all. But sometimes I'll just reach back and get something, and someone will come up out of the audience and they'll say, you know, I can relate to that. So you never know. You never know who the message is for.
Well, you know, and that's something. The reason I asked the question, if there's someone out there who hears this and they're inspired, and maybe they've been inspired by something and words came to them.
Exactly.
I want you to tell us about that so that they would know how to put it down.
Yeah, you know.
Because I know, I would think, anyway, that a lot of people have those moments of creativity, but they get lost because they don't jot it down.
Yeah, yeah. I keep a journal.
Uh-huh.
You know, so a lot of my work comes through the journal.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I'm just writing about things that are going on or things that I've seen. Or, you know, I keep up with everything as best I can. And sometimes I go back through the journal and I'll see a prayer. You know, I say, wow, I'll take that out. You know, I'll see a conversation that might have, you know, got it written down in a way that was presentable.
Right.
And I'll say, I'll take that out. I mean, most of my poems are in journals. They come out of journals, and a lot of them are, like I said, on napkins. And I would advise people, if you want to write, just document your work. Keep up with your work so you can see how you grow. You know, in the past 10 years, I can see how I've changed in my writing. Okay. You know, so you want to keep up with it. And if it's your truth, then present it, and present it boldly, if that's your truth. So when I read my poetry, those are my truths. That's how I see it. That's Donna Garrett's take on it.
Right. Well, and that's
yeah,
for everyone.
That's for everyone. So value
it. You read
right.
that, and it spoke to me. It probably spoke to a lot of other people out in the audience.
Oh, I hope so.
And I wouldn't be willing to wager that somewhere out there, someone said, gosh, and it's inspired them. So take your pad and pencil, go write it down.
Yeah, write it down.
Even
go
if it doesn't
down.
Go anywhere else, it's
write
for you.
Write it down, it's for you, yeah.
because it's a gift.
It's a gift.
It's a gift, just like your stuff is. Well, Jim, where does your creativity come from?
My creativity come from...
What inspires you?
Other people.
Really?
And
okay.
Experience with other people. And then, so I'm a great collector of little bits and odds and ends. And then at some moment, that person will come alive in my art. And my paintings and sculptures usually interpret a story.
Okay.
And so I really get inspired by people and the emotion I feel from them. And some things take a while to come alive. And so I try to juggle three or four projects at one time. So that's how you get to be a super creative person.
Now, how many media do you work in?
I try to work in everything I can.
But that doesn't answer my question. You have your favorites.
My favorite is clay.
Clay, okay.
I like to make clay sculpture.
We've talked about beads and painting, and you say clay is your favorite.
Clay is my favorite, and I really love the Japanese technique called raku, which is mostly just matte glazes and copper glazes, and nature take its course.
Really? Okay. I don't know that I've seen that, and I'm aware of it.
And I believe that on the seventh day, God created glue, so I really love, like, decoupage and glue and things. So, you know, at the store, every free moment I have, I open up glue and glue to showcases, whatever I can.
Right. Okay, so we've got that media, and you paint also.
Oh, yeah.
Donna?
Painting is something I do to keep me calm. I'm retired. So, I mean, at last, I have an opportunity to do things I want to do. It's hard to do art when you work. When you're doing 40, 50 hours a week, you're in steady preparation to do 40, 50 hours a week.
Right.
So it's hard to get your art in, you know. So after I retired, I had a chance to write, you know, and document my work and paint and bead. I was beading. Mm-hmm. I like to make things, you know, so... that's how I pass time, you know.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, I want to quickly, what is your email address if people want to contact you?
dg5001@sbcglobal.net.
You sound like that's a poem. And Jim, give us the information on this Friday.
Okay. We're having Christmas in July, so please come by. We're going to have a trunk show, a poet doing her thing. And I think we're going to do Charlie Brown Christmas with Gail.
Give us your address.
I'm at 3838 North Shepherd.
This Friday, 6 p.m.
6 to 9.
All right.
So please come by.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us on.
Oh, and hello, Casey. I wanted to say hi to Casey. She's a great supporter here.
This is Queer Voices.
Walking and running behind.
Everybody is a hopeful in this city of talent and time. High on determination to live it out. Everybody's distracted when they dance with one eye on the door. So afraid to be missing the next best thing. There's something more. All these days are not how we dreamed they would be. And those we love are not who we thought we would see. And no one here can remember the name of his hometown or where it came from. There's not much here, so we can give it up and run. Your departure and settle the debts that you owe. 'Cause they know that we're leaving and won't be back. We'll find a home. All these days are not how we dreamed they would be. Those we love are not who we thought we would see. Not much here, so we can give it up and run. All this restless reconciling goes down sweet. And it was, but it wasn't. And it does, but it doesn't make this place the home I need. Whoa. All these days are not how they would be. And those we love are not who we thought we would see. And no one here can remember the name of his hometown or where it came from. There's not much here, so we can give it up. There's not much here, so we can give it up. There's not much here, so we can give it up and run.
Satisfied watching the world through your glasses. Mr. Carpentier, I have so much to learn. Why don't you come here and teach me? Needless to say, I've been slipping away to a place where nobody can reach me. I don't know if I was made for this world. They point and they stare at my dress like a 12-year-old girl. You smile like a child and I'm just squirming in my own skin. You leave through the soccer field to the swing sets once again. We go through the motions like fish in the oceans and paint the town red with the blood of the dead. We're all pretending the world isn't ending and everything's fine as we shop and we dine. But you're fat and you're free and you're taking up space. Drive your SUV while you're stuffing your face. Your children are spoiled and addicted to oil, and they buy lots of plastic and they throw it away. I don't know if I can make it through this day. The ocean's too high and the sky is too gray. The weight of the world, gravity is finally setting in. Take me through the soccer field to the swing sets once again. Fish and I hit like a girl, and I'm scared of myself and I hide from the world. But your heart's like a whale and you're built like a tank and you keep me alive. I'd like to thank you, cause there were times I couldn't make it through my day. When I lost my shit and they should have carted me away. But you're always there, you care and you believe in what I do. Wanna go through the soccer field to the swing set. Yeah. Me and you. Let's swing high. Let's swing high. So high we touch the sky.
Nice selection of music there. That was Robert German, Mr. Carpenter, from his 2008 CD, Unplug. And before that, Phil Putnam. Not much here from his 2007 CD, Best of Intentions. And then a new release, Barry Gold, Walking and Running, Knocking on Another Door. This is Queer Voices, and I was going to say that Joan was going to join us from Iowa, but we're having problems with the phones this evening for some reason, and so we're going to have to keep trying with what we were doing.
But perhaps I should start with something simple, like what's your name, what is your history, what is your name, what is your pleasure, what is your pain, I want to know. For a walk, spend some time together, and we could talk. I want to know what is your name. What's your name? I see you across the street every day. I catch the furtive glances you throw my way. I want to know all there is to know. I want to know what makes your heart grow. But perhaps I should start with something simple. Like what's your name? What is your history? What is your game? What is your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know. Maybe we could go outside for the walk, spend some time together and we could talk. I want to know where you're from. We could do dinner and have a good time. Just relax, share a bottle of wine. And if we're good together, we'll make love.
there's something I should know before we begin. Oh, what's your name? What is your history? What is your game? What is your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know, what is your name? Maybe we could go outside for a walk, spend some time together, and we could talk. I want to know, what is your name? What's your name? What is your history? What is your game? What gives your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know.
That was Robert Kuhn from his 2006 CD, What's Your Name? And that's Kuhn spelled K-U-H-N, and the CD name is Proof. This is Queer Voices.
Beyond material success, what is the American dream now? At a time when our country is in transition, what values matter to Americans? How can we find common ground for solutions to a long list of pressing problems? I'm David Freudberg. Join us for Dreaming of America.
Tune into this special on Tuesday, July 22nd at 4 p.m. Tune in an hour earlier to catch the local station board report at 3 p.m. Again, that's Tuesday, July 22nd, right here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Okay, hopefully this thing will hold together long enough. Joan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And you survived the floods up there in Iowa.
Yes, I did. I was a little island in the stream. I literally was surrounded by river. I had about a three-mile radius I could travel in.
Wonderful. Go ahead and introduce your guest.
Yes, we are talking to Paul Fisher, who is the author of House of Wits, an intimate portrait of the James family. And, Paul, how are you tonight?
Just great, thanks.
First, I want to compliment you. This is a very extensive book, and it's also a very wonderful book. I really enjoyed reading it.
Glad to hear it.
So what, of all things, made you want to do a book about the James family? I mean, I'm an English literature major, so, of course, I've heard of Henry James, and I'm sure those in the medical profession would have heard of his brother William. But what made you want to do such a complete book on the entire family, because you really pretty much have covered everybody from grandparents on down?
Well, this is one of the most amazing families in American history, and as you were saying, it contains some famous members: Henry James, the novelist; William James, the philosopher and psychologist; and Alice James, who kept a secret diary. If people don't know about Alice James, she's great. Her brother called her bottled lightning, and she was very intense. Now, as amazing as it is that there's a couple of famous members in this family, what's even more amazing to me is the backstory of conflict and dysfunction that got these people where they got. And it turns out they pioneered much of what we think of as modern America.
Yes, and you know what kind of I found amazing was that, given everything that they went through, you know, with the exception of, you know, there were two other brothers that didn't do quite as well, but given everything they'd all been through, that they turned out so many very, you know, successful individuals, even though the road was rather hard.
It's an amazing family, and many of the members are individually amazing, and you put them together in the whole in the same family, and you've got a firecracker bunch.
And, you know, Alice, for being the girl, because this was the thing that struck me, the boys were encouraged. They were nurtured. You know, they were expected, particularly the two older boys, which would have been Henry and William, they were expected to do great things. And Alice, as a girl, was basically expected to be quiet and modest and learn how to sew. And, you know, being as intellectually quick and just as brilliant as the rest of the Janes, she really struggled with that throughout her life. She was pretty much repressed for the majority of her life.
Absolutely. Alice had a very hard time of it with her four brothers and with a family that didn't think much of women's intellect and women as writers and as people in general. I mean, one of the tragedies about this is that there are times was one of the great early feminist movements. There was a lot of feminism going on, but various members of the family didn't believe in it. Henry James Sr., the father, and Henry James Jr., the one that became the famous novelist, both of them didn't believe in the women's movement, and Alice suffered for it.
Yes, and it's a shame, too, because she was a brilliant writer in her own right. In fact, Henry, when he was starting out, would actually use some of her commentary and some of her ideas for his magazine articles that he was writing.
Absolutely. When they traveled together in Europe in 1872, Henry did just that. Alice described it as stealing her pearls, some of her very best ideas, and kind of using them without giving her credit for them.
Right. And now let's. I'm talking to Paul Fisher, author of House of Wits, and I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the, you know, among other dysfunctions in the family. We had some of the hidden sexuality. Alice, later in life, lived with a woman named Kate Loring in what many believed to be what was called back then a Boston marriage. Henry James was gay, although it was kind of the way he, in the book you talk about this, it was kind of a, he almost had like a love-hate relationship with his homosexuality.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. One thing to keep in mind is that the word, as you know, the word homosexual wasn't used until 1869, and that was in German. It wasn't used in English until 1892, so this was an emerging consciousness at the time. And so both of these members of the James family had a unique relation to this. As you mentioned, Alice James, anytime two women lived together, it was called a Boston marriage. And Alice James had this woman, Catherine Peabody Loring, that she spent a lot of time with, sometimes lived with, that was very possibly her lesbian lover. Not all Boston marriages were what we would now call lesbians, but this probably was. Henry James is a complicated case. There's a lot of argument about this. This is one of the longest footnotes in my book, and not because he didn't have the impulses. This becomes very clear, especially late in his life when he had protégés, younger men to whom he wrote very passionate letters. But sometimes there's some dispute about how to describe his relation to being a homosexual or being gay, and partly because the terminology was emerging at the time.
And yet, he himself was never very comfortable with his sexuality, and I mean, it was like none of them really were.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that the odd thing, another one of the dysfunctionally odd things about the family was that none of them, straight or gay or in between, were ever very comfortable with their sexuality.
Absolutely not, and I was going to say this is one thing that's very Victorian about the family. Many aspects of these people, as far as I'm concerned, are strikingly contemporary. They deal with so many things that we deal with in the here and now. A lot of these things I mentioned in the book that are big live wires, alcoholism, love, sex, homosexuality, and so forth, but they were quite sexually repressed, and this was quite typical of many of the middle-class people of the time, and Henry James epitomized this. He was very closeted. He was very private and careful about his personal life.
Yes, and he tended to prefer the company of women, which I also found interesting.
Yes,
in the main, even though he, on the one hand, disdained them, on the other hand, he sought them out.
Exactly. He almost always had a primary woman friend who was very important to him. One of these was Edith Wharton, a famous writer of the time. Another one was Constance Fenimore Woolson, another writer of the time who has been rediscovered by feminists. And he really depended on these women at the same time that he was an anti-feminist and had a low opinion of women's abilities sometimes. So he was a bit of a puzzle.
So what has the response been to the book so far? It's been out, I guess, a couple of months now. What has the response been?
Well, I'm really looking at these people in kind of a different way, and it either makes people very happy or unhappy. I mean, when I'm touching, again, as I was mentioning before, some of these live wires like mental illness, alcoholism, love, sex, and homosexuality, that to some people that looks like a very contemporary portrait that makes the James family very relevant. Other people are threatened that these American icons would be tarred with these particular qualities. But for me, what's really essential about the James family is that these more complicated qualities of the family is what really contributed to their achievements.
Yes, as I was reading the book and even looking, if you even go beyond the siblings, even kind of the unconventional upbringing Henry James Sr. had, you kind of wonder, it really is. It's almost like all these, different kind of components came together. I think if they had, like, quote-unquote normal upbringing, I don't know that they would have been able to achieve some of the things they were able to achieve.
I think you're exactly right, Joan, and it's something that I was fascinated by in this family. Their hardships or their dysfunction or their difficulties were what made them really interesting people. And one of my favorite examples is William James, who suffered a lifetime of depression but then became an amazing psychologist and a very compassionate, humane thinker.
Right, and just the experiences they had as children, because Henry Sr., who also struggled with depression and then had his alcoholism as well, also had the wandering feet, where he would just every so often, every couple of years, he would just get up and move. And at one point, he packed up the whole family and moved them off to Europe. And they were all over Europe for what was it, about 10 years? And
yeah,
they really had to rely on each other. And I think that too was kind of part of the reason, because through their whole lives, it almost seemed like the family kind of had a love-hate relationship with each other.
Well, many people can relate to that in a family, and the Jameses are very much that way. They're very close and very loving family. One of the reasons I enjoyed writing about them was because of this. At the same time, they're very peculiar and very troubled and do travel all over the world, and largely thanks to Henry James Sr., as you said.
So, for people perhaps that are not like English literature majors or even just, interested in, because everybody knows who Henry James is, what would you say to them as far as, to read the book? Because, like you said, it touches on so many universal themes, but it's such an interesting character study. However, I know some people kind of get intimidated when they see a nonfiction book. So what would you say? Because I would like to say it reads like a novel. I thought it was amazing.
Well, thanks so much. I really worked hard to make this book something that anyone could read and that would really take you into a world and make you part of that world. And I think that any biographer or nonfiction writer really has that responsibility to make it relevant to the here and now. And I've really tried hard to do it in the book. I mean, these are complicated people who live in fascinating, glittering times. But I really try to make it something that's almost as if it's about any one of our families, because that's who these people are to me. They're like my next door neighbors or friends of mine that I really try to understand on a very human level.
And I want to touch too a little bit here on, because there have been books about Henry James, there have been books, other books about some of the different Jameses, but I want to talk a little bit because you actually found, you did some very extensive research, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about the things that you were able to find and to discover and to discuss that kind of sets your book apart from other studies of the James family.
Well, there's a huge amount of material. One thing to keep in mind is these were almost all writers, and they left a tremendous amount of material, not only their sort of published works, but letters. Henry James, the novelist, alone left more than 10,000 letters, many of these very expressive. What I've really tried to do, in a way this has been combed through by scholars, but I've looked for some very specific things. I've looked for the intimate inside story here, and these themes of the family. And what I've really done is dug into the language of the documents, looked at photographs and handwriting and doodles and shopping lists, and really got to know these people in depth. I've literally spent years in libraries and archives, and my goal, again, as I was saying, is to bring these people to life by knowing them as well as I know my friends.
And didn't you say, I believe in your foreword, you mentioned that you actually got to speak to someone who had met Henry James when they were this individual was very, very young?
Absolutely. That was a really moving experience I had when I was in England. I met a man who was in his 90s who, when he was a young art student in London way back at the beginning of the 20th century, actually met Henry James on several occasions. And for me, that was a very moving moment of a living link. And that's what I've tried to reduplicate in the book. I've tried to make a very living book that connects to the past.
And how can people get your book?
Well, it should be around in bookstores or on Amazon. There are a lot of copies floating around, I believe.
Great. Well, Paul Fisher, I want to thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. Paul Fisher is the author of House of Wits, An Intimate Portrait of the James Family. It is an absolutely wonderful book. I want to say you got me in trouble at work because you had me up so late reading it that I'd be falling asleep at my desk the next day, but it was worth it.
I'm so glad to hear that. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being with us. You're listening to Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices.
In the studio now, we have one of my favorite organizations represented by one of my favorite people in Houston, the lovely Carrie Pope.
Thank you so much for having me.
And who do you represent there?
I represent Bering Omega Community Services.
Yay. That's one of my, you know, there are several organizations in Houston, HIV/AIDS organizations, that do great work, but Bering Omega is one of those. And
thank you.
I think, you know, there's not enough recognition for Bering Omega. So let's talk about that tonight and
okay.
Some of the things that Bering Omega does.
Sounds great.
Let's talk about how did Bering Omega get started.
Well, it actually started as two separate organizations. It started out as Omega House in 1986. Mm-hmm. It was founded by a 76-year-old woman named Eleanor Munger. And she wanted to start a hospice in the Montrose area. She actually lived in the Montrose area, and obviously that was a devastating time.
Time and
right,
place.
Right.
And ground zero, I guess, in Houston.
Ground zero, exactly. And she wanted to do something about this crisis. And so she asked her church for seed money for a hospice. And
asking church for money for a hospice.
That's right. And for basically a gay male hospice.
Right,
and,
right.
The 76-year-old little old lady started it. And they gave it to her. They gave her $10,000 seed money. This was Christ Church Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And so she started Omega House. And
okay.
That started out completely volunteer run. And then meanwhile, across town in Montrose, Bering Community Service Foundation was founded by Bering Memorial United Methodist,
mm-hmm.
and that was founded in 1987. That was a similar situation, ground zero.
Right.
The church was performing something like 3 to 4 funerals a week.
I heard about those times when it was every
horrible,
weekend. Yeah.
Horrible circumstances. And so a group of volunteer dentists actually started a completely volunteer-run dental clinic,
mm-hmm.
and also an adult daycare center.
Okay.
And then in 1999, those two organizations, Bering Community Service Foundation and Omega House, merged to form Bering Omega Community Services.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have those three core programs, our dental clinic, adult daycare center, residential hospice, Omega House, and then our housing assistance program, which came shortly thereafter.
Right, right. So what is your title at Bering Omega?
My title is the Resource Development Manager.
Okay.
So
what is your role?
In a nutshell, I guess I'm sort of the fundraising, sort of the development person, community events person, and I also manage the volunteer program.
Yeah, because you're very visible around town in the community.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Now, tell us about some maybe volunteer opportunities.
Well, that's a great question. We have an amazing volunteer program, and actually our organization probably could not run at the capacity we're at without our huge core of volunteers. We have approximately 800 volunteers
wow.
each year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's numerous opportunities, particularly directly in the programs. So our volunteers do everything from filing an intake at the dental clinic to bedside care at Omega House to taking clients on field trips at the adult daycare center. So there's, in other words, there's numerous opportunities
right.
to work directly with the clients. And then also there's opportunities to volunteer at community events, special events that benefit Bering Omega, our gala.
Mm-hmm.
There's just tons of opportunities
there. So if
there,
we have listeners out there that want to volunteer, do they go to the website or do they contact a certain person? How do they?
Yes. Well, they could do either. We have a website, www.beringomega.org. And then if they're wanting to talk to a person directly, they can call our volunteer coordinator, Shelley Smith, at 713-341-3761.
Very good. Now, how did you get involved with all this?
That's a great question. Well, I happened to move to Houston. I never saw myself moving to Houston until maybe 3 or 4 years ago when my partner started going to Rice University to get his master's degree. But I
detect a southern twang.
There is a southern twang.
A slight southern twang underneath.
It's good that you noticed that even in Houston.
Well, you know, I spent years trying to disguise my. I'm a southern Texas boy, you know,
yeah.
from Houston, basically. And I've worked to eliminate the accent,
just
but
can't do it.
There's certain words, like you say OIL.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's that, you know, diphthong,
yeah,
I think,
exactly.
in your vowels. Yeah.
So you're a southern girl?
I'm a southern girl from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh.
Yeah.
The home of tobacco.
That's right, the tobacco state.
Yeah.
And I moved to Houston, and I had a background in public health, but I've always had a particular interest in HIV and AIDS. And
now, why is that? I find that some, you know, people have a reason, a calling.
Mm-hmm.
They knew somebody. What
right.
was yours?
I think it was a number of things. I did have a friend of the family who was diagnosed as positive at a very young age, but I also had worked in various areas of public health, and I worked for one of the first nonprofits in the United States to address, I guess, what they called social health problems at
mm-hmm.
the time. So HIV and AIDS and other various ailments, I guess.
Right.
So I always had an interest in HIV and AIDS. And I think a large part of that had to do with the fact that, you know, if somebody has cancer, they're able to at least tell their friends and family, hey,
yeah,
I have
yeah.
cancer. And then it's like, and nobody says, how could you get cancer, you know?
Right.
Whereas if somebody is diagnosed as HIV positive, there is sort of that expectation.
There's still a stigma today.
Exactly. There's a huge stigma. It's many people don't tell their family. They don't
yeah.
tell their friends. And even when they do, they're sort of blamed for that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's sort of me.
And it's very identified with a certain segment of the population still today.
Right.
And so
right.
it kind of carries that, you know.
Stigma.
Stigma.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you came to Houston. How long ago was that?
That was about 3 years ago, and then I've been with Bering Omega for about a year and a half now, or almost 2 years, and it's such an amazing organization. I'm just so proud to be a part of it.
Now, as a nonprofit, we know that it's important to fundraise. Are there certain things you have going on throughout the year?
We do. We have a number of events throughout the year. AIDS Walk in particular is
mm-hmm.
huge for us, but also, thank you, AIDS Foundation, a little plug to our sister organization
yeah.
that organizes
well,
that.
We love AFH.
We do too. And but our number one fundraiser is our gala,
mm-hmm.
which actually takes place, it's coming up in a couple of months. It's on September 27th of this year, and
okay.
it takes place at the Wortham Theater Center
right.
in Cullen Hall.
Okay.
And that's actually, it's actually a benefit performance.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, great. good segue.
Yes.
So
you've done this before.
Yes. But Sing for Hope was actually founded by a young opera star by the name of Camille Zamora. She is a Houston hometown hero, homegrown hero, went to Houston School for the Performing and Visual Arts. And she volunteered at Omega House.
Really?
But also, sort of a full circle story, years later had a friend pass away at Omega House after she had sort of started making it big in New York as an opera star. And after that, she wanted to do something to help friends like hers who had passed away at Omega House. So she started Sing for Hope, an evening of art songs and arias. And
we're going to have to break for a station identification.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston.
And we appreciate you listening. Okay, now Carrie, back to Art Songs and Arias.
Right. So Camille founded Art Songs and Arias, Sing for Hope, 14 years ago.
Okay,
and this is, I mean, it just keeps growing.
I know, it's massive.
Yeah, it just, right now, I mean, we're almost, well, it seems like the funds have doubled since, you know, even two or three years ago. It's just become this huge, huge favorite event for many in Houston, and I'm just so grateful to be a part of it.
And that's in September, what day?
September 27th, that's a Saturday.
Okay, and it's at the Hobby Center?
It's actually, we used to be at the Hobby Center. We've moved now to Wortham Center.
Okay.
We've kind of outgrown Zilka Hall.
Yeah, Zilka is kind of medium-sized.
Yeah, and so this year's going to be huge. We're in Cullen Hall, that's an 1,100-seater.
That's a huge, it's very big.
And so we're just thrilled to be there. We're so excited, and she's bringing in 10 of her friends in the opera world who are also, you know, bright stars, and so we're just...
Well, we'll have to bring you back on in September.
That'd be great.
So tickets will be available on the website?
Tickets are available now, actually, through us on the website or by calling our fundraising number. That's 713-341-3762. And there's also, if you're feeling particularly generous, there are sponsorship opportunities available as well.
And how much does this raise, typically, this event?
Well, this year we're expecting or hoping to raise more than $350,000.
Oh, my gosh.
We hope to.
That's incredible.
That's the goal.
So, that's incredible.
Yeah, and we think we'll get there.
Now, do you have any other events throughout the year?
We do. Well, there's various events. We're very lucky, and I tell people that the Houston, particularly the GLBT community in Houston, has really embraced its organizations that that benefit it. And so there's various events throughout the year. I know you in particular know about Jungle and BCBC.
BCBC.
Yeah, Bayou City Boys Club.
Yeah.
So Jungle each year gives a huge check to Baring Omega, and we're very grateful
Baring
for
Omega
that.
Is always kind of at the top of our list and kind of one
we
of
We appreciate
our,
that. That's
well, I think the thing about Baring Omega is the diversity of services it provides to the community. I mean, there's so it's not just one thing. It's, you know, multiple things.
Right.
And it's wide. You know, the money goes to a multiple different opportunities and support of the community.
Right, and we really value that, and we also make sure to place an emphasis on, you know, the programs themselves. 86 cents of every dollar donated goes directly to our programs services.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so let's refresh.
We have
the lovely Carrie Pope, director of
Resource development
at Baring Omega. The website is
www.baringomega.org.
And if they have volunteer opportunities, questions, they want to stand up and support their community, they can call?
They can call Shelley Smith. She's our volunteer coordinator at 713-341-3761.
Very good. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know about Baring Omega?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things, but...
It's all on the website,
though. It's all on the website.
You know, if you've never heard of Baring Omega, go to the website, attend one of their events, visit one of their services, their adult service center.
They're free of charge. All of our services
the dental
are provided
center, the,
free of charge.
I took a tour of the Omega House, and it's amazing.
Yes. It's a wonderful, wonderful place.
It's very, you know...
peaceful.
Reminiscent of a time gone by, but it's still a necessary resource in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the first hospice in the state of Texas.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So.
Right. Well, Carrie, thank you for coming
thank
on Queer Voice.
Thank you so much for having me,
we'll
Brian.
Have to,
this
we'll have to
great.
Bring you back.
I'll, yes, please do.
Well, I think everybody can tell that I love Carrie. So.
And we love Brian. We love BCBC.
All
so.
Right.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Carrie. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
And, Brian, are you confused? It's after 10 o'clock and Queer Voices is still on the air.
I am a little confused. And today was my first day of work, and I started a new job, and I'm kind of tired. But
and Queer Voices changed an hour.
Changed an hour. So those of you who are still listening.
So on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that's or stressors. On Maslow's hierarchy of stressors, that's. That's the two things right up there at the top. There's like losing a spouse, you know, death of a spouse, and then there's changing a job.
Yes.
And then there's having your radio show change.
Radio show pushed back an hour.
Yeah.
But so. For those of you listening, continue listening. We have another hour to go.
That's right. We're still on Mondays because this is Monday, right?
Today's Monday. Yes, a long Monday.
But we start an hour later, which means I get to have a nap before the show.
Yes, yes. Well, keep listening. We have a wonderful guy coming up, Paul Hidalgo. From Snap, and he'll be in here shortly to tell us all about that.
But in the meantime, here's News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Don Beaupre.
And I'm Erica Springer.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 19th, 2008. Police in the Gulf City state of Dubai, one of the seven oil-rich United Arab Emirates, arrested up to 40 men this week, various reports differ on the number, in a crackdown on cross-dressers in shopping malls and other public places. All of the men are non-resident workers or tourists, according to a statement by Dubai Police Chief Lieutenant General Dahai Khalfan Tamim on his organization's website. Dahai reported that administrative deportation orders would be sought against all of them. He denounced a campaign in May under the slogan, "Our social values are precious, let's protect them," targeting those who do not respect social values and behave like the opposite sex. A comparable campaign was announced in similarly Muslim Kuwait in June, specifically targeting gay men in addition to cross-dressers. A Kuwaiti MP told a local newspaper that the government has to crack down on what he called girly boys, who he claimed promote crime and sexual immorality in the country. Kuwait's parliament passed a law in December that makes imitating the appearance of the opposite sex a crime punishable by up to 1 year behind bars. Subsequent roundups netted at least 16 suspects, according to Human Rights Watch, which reported that three detainees were beaten.
But the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe plans to issue a formal declaration in support of a wide range of sexual orientation and gender identity rights, and to engage the entire organization in combating discrimination against LGBT people. European Union anti-bias protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity now only cover employment. The committee is composed of 27 foreign ministers of the Council of Europe's member nations. However, the proposals must receive unanimous support in order to be enacted. Boris Dietrich, advocacy director of the LGBT rights program at Human Rights Watch, said that the European Union's Charter of Fundamental Rights prohibits any discrimination on any grounds, including sexual orientation. It is past time to turn that promise into real protections.
The U.S. Senate voted this week to repeal a 21-year-old law barring HIV-positive people from visiting or seeking legal residency in the country. The measure was attached to a spending bill that triples amounts for programs that treat and protect millions in Africa and elsewhere from HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. The Senate version will have to be worked out with the House, which passed its version of the bill in April. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chair Joseph Biden of Delaware told reporters that he'd been coordinating with House leaders on the legislation and was confident of approval of a reconciled version sometime soon that includes repeal of the ban. It originated in 1987 and was explicitly codified by Congress in 1993 when it reformed U.S. immigration laws. While they currently exclude foreigners with any communicable disease of public health significance from entering the U.S., only HIV is specifically named in the statute. Rachel B. Tiven, executive director of the U.S. LGBT advocacy group Immigration Equality, called the ban ineffective, unnecessary, and simply bad public health policy, adding that it is especially harmful to gay and lesbian families who do not benefit from the waiver available to opposite-sex couples. The Senate's change is welcome and long overdue.
There were marriage equality developments in three U.S. states this week. As expected, the California Supreme Court refused to hear a challenge to the legality of Proposition 8, a November ballot initiative that would nullify the court's May 15th ruling and constitutionally ban same-gender marriage. Thousands of same-gender couples have gotten marriage licenses, and many have already married in the state since the court ruling took effect in mid-June. A new field poll released this week suggested that Proposition 8 will fail, if only by a bare majority. 51% opposed the measure, while 42% said they'd vote for it. 63% of respondents identifying themselves as Democrats were against Proposition 8, and 66% of independents were opposed to it, but 68% of Republicans supported the proposed ban. The well-respected field poll surveyed 672 likely California voters during the week of July 8th through 14th. It had a sampling error of plus or minus 3.9 percentage points. Poll director Mark DiCamillo told reporters that starting out behind is usually an ominous sign for a proposition. Over 90% of propositions that start out behind get taken down. Marriage equality advocates say they're heartened by the poll results, but note that the November 4th vote is still months away and that opponents of Proposition 8 must continue to fundraise and organize against it.
About 200 LGBT activists and union members gathered in front of the Manchester Grand Hyatt in San Diego this week to launch a boycott of the hotel. Its owner, prominent local businessman Doug Manchester, donated $125,000 to the campaign in support of Proposition 8. About a half a block away, nearly 100 who favor the proposed amendment staged a counter-demonstration.
Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Times reported that dozens of United Methodist Church ministers in California are defying church rules and performing wedding ceremonies for same-gender couples, even though they could be defrocked for doing so. The two bishops who oversee the United Methodist Church in the state, Marianne Swenson and Beverly J. Shimana, are warning pastors that they could face a church trial and lose their jobs. But the Reverend Janet Golery McKeithen of Santa Monica's Church in Ocean Park told the Times that she plans to conduct weddings for two same-gender couples in August and September. "I love my church and I don't want to leave it," she said. "But I can't be part of a church that is willing to portray a God that is so hateful. I would rather be forced out." The United Methodist Church is the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. with some 11 million members.
Same-gender couples from Wisconsin who marry in California could also be punished by up to 9 months in jail and a $10,000 fine. That penalty is part of a 1915 law originally enacted to prevent recognition of interracial marriages performed in other states. It could be revived to prosecute Wisconsin gay and lesbian couples who tie the knot in California. Unlike Massachusetts, the only other U.S. state where same-gender marriage is legal, the Golden State has no residency requirement. Wisconsin voters approved a constitutional amendment in 2006 restricting marriage to heterosexual couples. Julaine Appling of the right-wing Wisconsin Family Council told reporters that same-gender couples who break the 1915 law by marrying in California should be punished, calling it a defrauding of the government. But activist Bob Kleba in Madison told the local Capital Times newspaper that he still plans to marry longtime partner David Waugh in California, saying that it would be interesting to be prosecuted.
The Massachusetts Senate has voted to repeal a similar law passed in 1913, also originally designed to ban recognition of interracial marriages performed in other states. It's been used to bar same-gender couples from traveling to Massachusetts to get married if they can't legally wed in their home states. Soon after marriage equality became legal in 2004, then-Republican Governor Mitt Romney, who opposed it, ordered town clerks to enforce the little-known law and deny licenses to lesbi-gay couples from other states. Critics of the statute, including Democrat Deval Patrick, the state's first black governor, say it carries a racist taint and needs to be rescinded. The Senate did just that in a simple voice vote this week. The state's House of Representatives is expected to concur sometime soon. California, which doesn't require residency, is already reaping the financial benefits from same-gender couples who've been traveling to the state to get hitched. An analysis released by the Massachusetts Office of Housing and Economic Development found that repealing the 1913 law and allowing same-gender couples from other states to marry there would add $111 million to the Bay State economy.
Elsewhere, in the first country in the world to open full legal marriage to same-gender couples, Dutch authorities have developed a replacement for maiden name so that gay men who want to take their spouse's surname when they marry won't feel awkward. Geboortenaam translates to birth name. It will replace maiden name on official forms, according to a report this week by Radio Netherlands.
And finally, a court in Sicily has ordered the Italian government to pay 100,000 euros, about $160,000 U.S. dollars, to a man who was issued a disabled driver's license because he's gay. A few years ago, now 27-year-old Danilo Giuffrida told doctors he's gay during a medical examination for the armed forces to escape the 1 year of service that was required at the time, but has since been abolished. The information about Giuffrida, however, was passed on to the Ministry of Defense, which in turn released it to other government agencies, including the Transport Ministry. After he easily passed the driving test to renew his license, examiners told Giuffrida that he'd have to repeat the test or have his license suspended on the grounds of his sexual identity disturbance. After he passed the test a second time, he was told he'd receive only a 1 year renewal as a disabled driver rather than the usual 10 years. Giuffrida then filed his lawsuit. The court ruled that Giuffrida's constitutional rights had been violated and that homosexuality could not be considered a disability. His lawyer said he believed the verdict was the first time the Italian government has been found guilty of discrimination based on sexual orientation. Giuffrida said he'll use some of his lawsuit proceeds to buy a new car.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 19th, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Erica Springer.
And I'm John Beaupre.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And this is Brian Levinka. And in the studio now, we have the wonderful Paul Hidalgo.
Yes, Paul, hi.
Hi, thank you so
Welcome back, too.
Thank you so much for having me.
What's going on?
I'm here to talk about SNAP.
What is SNAP? Oh, now, what is SNAP?
The Spay-Neuter Assistance Program.
That's not what a drag queen would do whenever she's mad at somebody?
It could be.
Like, SNAP.
It could be.
I see. So, SNAP, the Spay-Neuter Assistance Program. Assisting whom?
Well, we have a truck that goes around. We have two trucks, one that goes around Houston, one that goes around San Antonio to low-income areas, providing free spay-neuter surgery. And also we have stationary clinics that provide low-cost spay-neuter surgery.
Which I have used and for both of my cats. I took them in there and for SNAP, for not only for at a reduced price, but also in paying for the service, you support SNAP.
Now, this kind of has a GLBT kind of tie into the community. How is that?
We have a very strong relationship with the GLBT community through their support for our animal aid program.
Oh.
Okay. Our animal aid program offers free and low-cost veterinary care to people affected by HIV/AIDS.
Oh, okay. So it's known that people, when they become affected with an illness, their pet relationship.
It affects them. We realize the financial burden that they face, and all too often people have to surrender their animals because they can't afford proper veterinary care for them. So we help alleviate that through our program.
Now, how did you get involved with SNAP?
I kind of just fell into SNAP. I was really looking for a job in a nonprofit, and I have a huge love for animals, and SNAP was willing to take me in, and it's just been a great experience.
And what sort of things do you do for SNAP?
I'm the development assistant and volunteer coordinator. I manage all the volunteers, and I also directly manage the animal aid program.
Okay, and so how many people do you have in that program?
Over 100 clients right now. We're still gaining more every day, so the numbers are growing.
Okay, so if we have someone out there that is in need of this sort of service, who do they contact?
They would call me at the administrative office, the number 713-862-3863. I'm there Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
So Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And this is Paul Hidalgo.
Right.
And the number once again?
713-862-3863.
If they'd like to learn more about SNAP, where would they go?
They can always go to our website, snapus.org.
All right. Want to get that in for sure.
Okay, so you have an upcoming event. You're a nonprofit, and as we know, all nonprofits live and die by fundraising. So you have an event coming up?
Yes, on this Saturday, Miss Perfect Vivica Perry is
doing... Wait. You got to say Miss Perfect.
Miss Perfect.
P-U-R-R-F-E-C.
Perfect. It's perfect.
There's a tie-in there.
Vivica Perry is throwing a drag show for Snap to raise money.
I'm not familiar with Vivica Perry.
Vivica Perry's new to Houston. She's from San Antonio.
Oh, you know, and San Antonio is like the capital of drag. I don't know what it is. Like, all the best drag queens come from San Antonio. I don't know.
Vivica's great. She's Miss Perfect. We had a drag pageant back in February, and she won the title, and she's now our ambassador.
How
wonderful.
I guess the pet ambassador. No, I guess...
Not the animal ambassador.
Animal ambassador.
They're fur people.
Fur people.
I try to tell you that. They're fur people.
And she's putting on this show, Beat the Heat. It's this Saturday at Tony's Corner Pocket.
And we do need to beat the heat. I mean, yes. Let's face it, July, I mean, it's getting hot. I walk outside and I about evaporate.
Where is Tony's Corner
Pocket? It's at 817 West Dallas.
817
It used to be Keys West back in the day, and then before that, it was, I forget what it was.
The Briar Patch.
Oh,
was it?
Okay. Yeah. All of y'all should know where that is?
It's right off West Dallas near downtown. It's near that Best Western.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Right next to downtown. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I hope y'all do.
Yes, and that's this Saturday?
This Saturday, 7:30.
7:30. And is there... tickets, cover charge?
There's no cover. It's open to everyone 18 and older.
So it's a great place to go.
Yeah.
To enjoy yourself, some entertainment, and also contribute to SNAP, right?
Right. You'll raise money for the Animal Aid Program.
And what other sort of entertainment?
We have a great lineup of drag queens. We have Regine Simone is our MC.
Mm-hmm.
Vivica Perry, of course. Genevieve Walker, Jose Silvas, Felicity Bliss, Sabrina Sims, and live music from Royal Lush.
I see. And that's a local artist?
That's a local artist.
I see.
So it's live music. Is it a band or an entertainer?
He's a singer.
Singer. Oh, okay.
Okay, so this Saturday, no cover. What else are you going to do? I mean, it's...
We get the tips. And we did our show we did back in February, we raised $2,000 in tips.
That's awesome.
So bring your $1 and fives and tens, right.
Well, there's another organization in town that their motto is they raise, you know, money $1 at a time or one, you know...
Every penny counts.
Every penny counts. Is there anything else that our listeners should know about SNAP? I mean,
we also have another exciting thing coming up. We have a calendar coming out with Chloe Dow from Project Runway.
Oh, my God.
Chloe Dow from Project Runway.
Oh, my God. I love Chloe.
Brett Chisholm Photography put together a calendar. It's going to come out in August, and they're going to be sold. You can buy them online. And all the monies goes to SNAP.
Now, is Chloe in the calendar, or is it her
design? Her
design,
her clothing.
My God. Isn't that wonderful?
Her clothing. Every
is she going to, like, appear and, like, autograph them?
We do have some autographed copies, but it's first come, first serve.
I'm like a Chloe Dow, like, groupie. I would love to meet her. Chloe, if you ever listen to our show, you know, I would love to meet you.
Now, what are the services that you can at SNAP? I mean, we've talked about this event and the services like this, but there are other things that
Right, we do have a wellness clinic. It's located at 1801 Durham Drive, and it's open 7 days a week, and you can take care of all your preventative care, vaccinate.
It's right there on the service road before you get to Durham.
Right.
Right,
that's right.
Isn't it near, like, right there.
Is it Mac Chen's over kind of by over that little, like, Jack's Brewery? Or Jack's Grill over there?
That's where our surgery clinic goes.
Okay. Our
wellness clinic is at 1801 Durham. It's by the Starbucks and that Puerto Rican restaurant.
In that strip center.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And there it's open 7 days a week. It's first come, first serve. No appointment necessary. You can go there to get vaccinations, heartworm preventative, flea preventative, all at a discounted rate.
And it opens at 7?
Its hours vary day to day.
Whenever she gets
check
up.
Check the website. I used it, so I was going to say,
check the website.
Be there early, because I've been there just before it opened, and it's like a big line.
The hours vary day to day, but it's usually open until about 6 o'clock.
And then you mentioned the surgery center?
The surgery clinic, it's located at 1603 Shepherd Drive.
And that's where the actual spay neuter is?
That's where spay neuter is.
Okay.
Now, I know, don't y'all have a feral cat program, too?
Not anymore.
Not anymore?
Not anymore.
Oh, because I was real impressed with that.
We do take feral cats, no appointment necessary. If you do happen to catch a feral cat, you just bring it to the surgery clinic in the morning for check-in, and we'll do the surgery, but we do it at cost.
At cost.
At cost.
Okay. All right.
So... Let's talk a little bit more about the Animal Aid Program. That's in conjunction with Pet Patrol?
We have a strong relationship with Pet Patrol. A lot of Pet Patrol clients are in the Animal Aid Program, but it's not strictly for Pet Patrol clients.
And so it's open to
the public.
Very good.
Anyone who qualifies is welcome.
Very good. And so if are there any volunteer opportunities for people?
There's always volunteers opportunities for...
You said you had, what, you had 100 or so people working with you?
No, didn't you have 100 clients?
I had 100
clients. Okay, so people that work with you, are they volunteers? Are they? I guess they are paid, or how does that work?
For
working with you at SNAP.
We have a strong volunteer base.
Okay, so if people out there are animal lovers and they want to get involved in the community, they contact you?
They contact me at the administrative office.
Okay.
Because about how many volunteers do you have?
It varies. About every 6 months, we volunteer in the Bayou City Arts Festival,
mm-hmm.
and we staff the beverage booths. And through that, we usually have about 300 volunteers that weekend alone, and that raises a lot of money for SNAP.
Oh, that's great. Now, how many do you need on a regular basis?
On a regular basis, it really depends on what you're interested in. If you want to come in the office, we always need office help.
Uh-huh.
If you want to work in the clinics, we always need clinic. It just really depends on what your interests are. We probably have something for you.
Now, is there like a training program to kind of work with the animals? Or?
Yes. Yeah. No. Well, actually, we can't work directly with the animals since they're not... They're just in our care. They don't belong to SNAP. They're just in our custody for the day.
Okay.
So for liability, we can't have people working hands-on with the animals. Mm-hmm. But we would love to have help at the clinics.
Very good.
There's always a lot to do at a clinic.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Animal clinic, especially.
Now, do you have any other fundraisers throughout the year that you have?
Yes, we do. And you can always check out our website, snapus.org, for more information on those. We have some in the works right now.
Very good.
And you gave your telephone number earlier in the show, but so in the interview, so why don't you give it again so people can call you. Now, this is about volunteering. You can give Paul a call at
713-862-3863.
And the website?
SnapUS.org.
Very good.
Is there anything else that we need to let them know?
Just come on out this Saturday to Beat the Heat. It's a great cause. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we can raise a lot of money for a great program.
And what else are you going to do? I mean, it's hot. Come inside.
Come inside. Enjoy a drink.
Enjoy a drink.
Enjoy the show.
And we've imported talent from San Antonio.
Yes, of course.
And it's at 7 o'clock?
It's at 7:30. But it's really when they get there.
And it's at Tony's Corner Pocket.
Tony's Corner Pocket.
Now, is this 7:30 drag time?
7:30 drag time.
Okay, so all of you that know what I mean by that... come early, but plan on staying late.
But maybe have a drink or two. And
have a drink or two before the show starts.
Bring your friends, have a little conversation, kind of get
but always save enough money to contribute.
And support the cause.
That's right, and support the cause. That's important. And it's at Tony's Corner Pocket, and it's where again?
817 West Dallas.
West Dallas. Anything else?
I think that's it. Paul, we appreciate you coming on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Square Voices.
It was a long road, it was a long time, it was a long way around this stuck mind. It was a way that I was looking at the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. It was a late night, it was the late fall. Late call. It was the things that I was hearing and the things I couldn't see.
was a lifeline. It was a long rest. It was a lifelong dream. Had a hard test. And it was the things that I was bearing and the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. Sometimes it takes a miracle. Sometimes it takes a stand. Sometimes it's quite empirical. And sometimes it's so grand. But most of all, it needs to be a sudden leap of faith. It's a leap of faith. And this is what I know, and this is what I see. It was the way that I was looking at me.
Trett Fury from last year, her album True Compass, that was Leap of Faith. And now here is the rest of This Way Out.
Start thinking of what you'd like lesbian humorist Kate Clinton to include on her list of things to do to Dick Cheney later in the program. Does the right to marry solve all the problems of U.S. same-gender couples and other non-traditional families? Feminist law professor Nancy Polakoff says absolutely not in her book, Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. Polakoff discusses her critique of marriage and what the alternatives might be with This Way Out correspondent Josie Cattogio.
Feminists have been critical of the institution of marriage for quite a number of years now. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, and in fact, one of the reasons I wrote this book was because I feel like, unlike you and me, there is at least a generation and maybe more who have grown up without any awareness of the feminist critique of marriage. And so part of what I'm trying to do in this book is reclaim that so that people like the students I teach will see another perspective on marriage. I mean, basically, they have grown up hearing the only criticism of marriage being the exclusion of same-sex couples. So they think that if they support marriage for same-sex couples, they've handled lesbian and gay family issues, and they've handled the problem with marriage. So really, this book is my effort to, you know, reclaim the history, as you say, of the critique of marriage that started in the 19th century with the feminist concerns about the subjugation of women in marriage, and then was quite prominent in second wave feminism in the 1970s in terms of a critique of marriage. But one of the things that's happened is that the law has changed so that we have gender equality in marriage under the law. And I think that makes a lot of people think that the problems have been solved when, of course, they haven't been. I do want to say, though, that when you say, you know, the law has no business in people's private relationships, I'm very sympathetic to that, except that the law all the time decides what relationships matter and what relationships don't matter. So if your partner is killed at work, the law has to decide whether you are going to get survivor's benefits to compensate for the loss of an income to you. And so what I'm trying to do in the book is argue that marriage should never be the dividing line in the law between the relationships that count and those that don't. And I am excited that I found so many examples, individual laws here and there, a patchwork across the country, that I feel like I was able to pull together and say, look, there's one place that gets this right. Let's spread this idea everywhere.
Well, talk about Canada, because Canada really does get it right, and that was a really startling example of the differences.
Yeah, I love to talk about Canada because I think most gay rights activists do know that same-sex couples can marry in Canada, and so they think of Canada as a haven in that regard. But what I like to tell people about is that in Canada, of course, different sex couples were able to marry. And then the next thing that happened in the law was the law began to treat different sex unmarried couples the same way it treated married couples. In fact, the Canadian Supreme Court has an opinion saying it offends the dignity of its people to require a couple to marry, that it's nothing more than imposing a religious doctrine on people who are entitled to choose not to marry. So they have non-discrimination against unmarried couples. And then same-sex couples were required to be treated in the law like unmarried different sex couples, which essentially gave them virtually all of the rights and obligations of marriage. And then only after that were gay and lesbian couples allowed to marry. So marriage is really a choice for everybody in Canada. If it expresses something about the way you love somebody, if it's a statement that you want to make, well, you can marry, whether you're a straight couple or a gay couple. But nobody has to marry for health insurance, survivor's benefits, pensions, tax benefits, the right to justice if your relationship ends, all the kinds of arguments that same-sex couples make here about why we should have access to marriage. In Canada, they've just removed marriage from the equation of legal rights.
Well, let's talk about children, because people invariably say, well, marriage exists for the protection of children.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that argument, and I hate it even more when the gay rights movement adapts it to arguing for same-sex marriage. And in the book, I do present some of the worst examples of this. I mean, basically, the right-wing marriage movement, secular and religious, and that's what they call themselves, the marriage movement, they do take the position that the decline of lifelong heterosexual marriage is responsible for all of our social problems. And I mean all of them. Poverty, homelessness, substance abuse, crime, delinquency, infant mortality, illiteracy, chronic illness. You name a problem, this movement is going to attribute it to the decline of lifelong heterosexual marriage. And what they're doing is creating this red herring, this distraction from the urgent social problems we have that cry out for a concerted public response. They're trying to turn it into a private moral failing. If only people would get married and stay married and raise their children in marriages, well, then we wouldn't have these social problems, which is, of course, complete nonsense. But it's got quite a number of adherents in the Bush administration, where $750 million have been allocated for marriage promotion. In my city, we have full-length bus shelter posters that say marriage works and that have brides and grooms on them. This is public money going to private groups to promote marriage. It's an outrage, really.
I know. As a feminist, I'm still utterly shocked that we're allowed to spend money that's supposed to feed children to promote marriage.
And I, you know, would like to see more outrage rather than seeing arguments used by gay couples to say, oh, marriage is so good for children, that's why you should let us marry. Really, those are the arguments that make me the most angry, because since the Supreme Court ruled in 1968 that children born outside marriage have the right to be treated equally with children born to married couples, any stigma that remains, any discrimination that remains between children whose parents are married and those who aren't, that's the problem. The solution isn't to get any more people married. The solution is to stop differentiating based on the marital status of children's parents. And so it makes me very angry when gay rights groups make those arguments.
Feminist law professor and writer Nancy Polakoff continues to go beyond marriage in the conclusion of her conversation with Josie Catoggio.
You can't disinherit your spouse, but you can disinherit your children. Like, how shocking is that? That if you've got some children with a former spouse, you can leave them absolutely nothing in your will, period. But your new spouse, that person you can't disinherit. I mean, it's completely backwards.
Next time on This Way Out.
Make 'em laugh, make 'em laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
When lesbian feminist humorist Kate Clinton brought her climate change tour to Alexandria, Virginia last November, she served up some choice words for members of the outgoing Bush administration in what she calls a buckshot lunch, despite her attempt at an attitude change.
But I'm trying to be all spiritual. And I'm going along and trying to be where my feet are and trying to be all Om Shanti Boom Boom. And then I am overwhelmed by violent fantasies. I have spent hours thinking about things that I would like to do to Dick Cheney. I'm not proud of it. Oh, Dick Cheney, what a pant load. Old number two, we call him. And now he's head of the fourth branch of government. He's the executive or something. And now apparently we have to call Dick Grandpa. Yes, because his lovely daughter, Mary, she's been busy. She's got a new book out, and it's called Self-Made Man. No, that's not it. It's called, it just sounds like a line from Shirley Temple. Now it's my turn. Oh, when wasn't it your turn? White girl. So she and her lovely partner, Heather, had a baby, and Dick and his lovely wife, Lon Cheney. She's fairy, that's all I'm saying. They went to visit the baby, and apparently they brought some lovely gifts. They brought a tiny water board, and oh, you're going to love the next one. And a starter BB gun kit. That story still kills me. The thing that bugged me was all his little pals were like, he's a great hunter. I'm like, he shot his friend in the face. Oh, he's a wonderful hunter. Okay, and then Dick said, I love that one line he said, well, I just had a beer at lunch with Mel Gibson. Okay. So he's a great hunter. He's a great hunter. So he shoots his friend in the face, and then he does what all good hunters do. He ate him. And then what he didn't finish, he shared with the village. You see, a lovely hunter. I laughed when I wrote it. So now apparently the little baby is talking, and it sounds like this. But then I'm trying to be, you know, trying to be cool, trying to be calm, trying to be kind of spiritual. You got it? I'll just be walking along, having a nice day, being where my feet are, and suddenly I have these raging resentments, generally about the war. But why is it that people who were for the war and changed their mind and now are against the war have more street credibility than I do, who was against the war from the beginning? Can you tell me that? I love those people who say, well, if I knew then what I know now. What exactly did you need to know? And then all summer long we were waiting for the Petraeus report. Oh, I don't know about you, but I was on pins and needles. Whatever is he going to say? And we're going to listen to Petraeus, who 2 years ago when he was there, he lost 110,000 AK-47s. Oops, clerical error. No, let's listen to him. Basically, the report was there was some good news and some bad news. The good news is that many Iraqis are not being killed because they're already dead or they've left the country. The bad news was that apparently the Iraqi parliament is not reaching political benchmarks. Please, our Congress is not reaching political benchmarks. And they have water and air conditioning and snacks. I'm telling you, Iraq is crack and he's on it. And it's hard to talk to people about it. I was on a plane, what are the chances? And I was circling Newark for about 4 hours. And I'm sitting next to this really big guy, because somewhere in my ticket dossier it says, sit her next to a really big guy who thinks the armrest is his. And we got talking, and we started talking about the war. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. And he was all jonesing for the war. He had a big war boner going on.
He's like, I'll tell you what we got to do. Here's what we got to do. We got to keep this surge thing going. We got to get more boots on the ground. We got to get some 508s in there. And blah, blah, blah. We're just watching his lips move.
And finally I said to him, you know what? Stop. I'm for peace. I'm against this war. And he said to me, well, little lady. I said, thank you so much. Because a lot of times on planes I get sirred, you know, because I just see short hair on the top. Will you have, sir? I always remember what Leah Delaria once said. When somebody said, will you have, sir? She said, a vagina. But he said, well, little lady, why do you hate your country so much? I was like, I don't hate my country. I love my country. I hate what's happening. And he was all like, well, what would you do? What would you do? What's your plan? And I thought, finally, someone is asking me what I would do. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I would do. I would go into Iraq and I would build malls. I would make that green zone into the mall of Iraq. I'd let them buy electronic equipment, iPhones, I don't care. Get them basic cable. Let them buy clothes, pastels, who cares? I mean, it's totally pacified us. It could work there. Now, for those of us who live above ground, we know it's not going well in Iraq, because now they're talking about getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now they're all like, oh, we think you guys are great soldiers. We were kidding. Get in the front. And then that Peter Pace, who said that homosexuality is immoral. I thought, oh, good. We're too immoral to fight in an immoral war. Two negatives make a positive. Thank you. Thank you so much. And those old retired military guys, they're all over the cable shows, you know, talking about gays in the military. And they're all like, well, if there are gays in the military, and they always talk through a burp. What is that? They're all like, well, if they're gay. Incoming. They're gays. Could you possibly burp and get back to me? Would that be all right? Well, if there are gays in the military, it'll destroy the military. Excellent. You know, I've always felt that apparently we could have put a flaming queen on a hillside in Iraq going, hello, and it would have been over and not a shot fired.
Kate Clinton's latest comedy CD is called Climate Change. For more information, log on to kateclinton.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Erica Springer, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and Josie Cotoggio contributed program material. You heard a cut from Kate Clinton's Climate Change CD. Donald O'Connor sang Make 'em Laugh, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to help keep us on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of all our programs there. To receive weekly email alerts describing the content of each This Way Out, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WFCS New Britain, Connecticut, KUOI Moscow, Idaho, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And so did you hear that Stephen Hawking might be moving to Kingston, Ontario?
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was some kind of a project, some kind of funding that he wanted to get for some kind of project at Oxford or wherever he's at.
Cambridge. He said Cambridge.
Okay. And they weren't going to do it. And apparently this big institute for physics that they have, I didn't know they have this, at Queen's University in Kingston.
No kidding.
And so he's seriously considering moving there or has already made the decision. I'm not sure which.
Probably some people don't know who Stephen Hawking is.
think wheelchair and computer voice.
Yeah, but there's more to him than that. I mean,
the Einstein of our time.
The Einstein of our times, yes, absolutely. Jack, what were you talking? We were talking about some this news was, in the national news.
This was covered on This Way Out. The Senate voted to drop the ban on HIV admission to this country. In other words, even if you were a tourist, officially the policy of this country was that you could not enter this country without special permission. This list was of 12 nations, including Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Libya, Sudan. So that's the
kind of company
yes,
we were in?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting.
It was overwhelmingly voted down by the Senate, and hopefully the
overwhelmingly?
Yes.
Well, how did our Texas senators vote?
Well, both Texas senators did not vote for this. There were only 16 senators that voted against that, and I believe every one of them were Republican.
But didn't George Bush want this to pass?
George Bush actually even believed this, because this was also wrapped into a HIV international funding bill. And it's pretty embarrassing that this was, you know, part of, you know, that we were sharing this with like 12 other nations. That was pretty bad. The Congress will probably vote for this also. And, you know, this is something that immigration and quality has made a priority to get this ban off the books.
Well, it's about time.
Really, it's pretty embarrassing that we were one of the countries. It's important, really, to keep up with the news and what's going on. By the way, if you think your clocks are wrong this evening, the show Queer Voices has moved from 8 to 10, now to 9 to 11. But if you subscribe to iTunes, you can download the show and be able to listen to it at your leisure.
And you can still go on the archives at the kpft.org and by the day and time, and you can listen to it or download it for your listening pleasure anytime.
Well, the nice thing about iTunes, it will do it for you automatically.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's just, you know, whenever they you know, you set your iTunes up, and it will check, like, every day you turn it on, it will check to see if those shows are available. Also,
sort of like TiVo.
Yes.
Or a DVR.
Exactly. And then you can either listen to it on your computer or then move it to one of your MP3 players. There's a couple other shows that KPFT has, including Technology Bites. I'm not sure what the entire list is. The quality isn't quite as good as we'd like it to be, but it's there. So it's real easy to listen to, and, you know, then you can just scan what you want to listen to or not. We're also looking into possibly pre-recording some of our interviews, because it might be harder to get some of the people.
Some of the guests come in this late, yeah.
Deborah's away this week. She's in Washington at the NOW convention.
Yes.
So I'm sure she'll update
us. She's our NOW girl.
Update us on what's going on. A lot of stuff is happening on politically. There will be, I know a bunch of the campaigns are looking for volunteers that are going out block walking.
Absolutely.
And knocking on doors and getting involved. And the other thing we want to do at the show is we're not going to be reading press release after press release, but we'd like to be able to do a rather short in calendar, talking about doing that at like the beginning of the show, the first part, and we'll set up a special email address. In the meantime, you can just send it to me, jack@queervoices.org, and if you have any press releases, and basically all we really need to know is the who, what, when, where, why.
Right, for the GLBT community, so because, you know, we don't have a weekly newspaper anymore that gives us that information. We have the wonderful magazine Outsmart, but it's a monthly magazine, and sometimes there are events coming up. Some of the ones we were talking about in the show tonight, Paul Hidalgo's event, as well as Jim Shade at their, you know, coming up this Friday. These are things that happen short notice, and this may be the only way the word can get out.
Yeah, and sometimes Outsmart isn't out at the beginning of the month, so stuff that happens in the first couple of days you don't really get to know about until
that's
it's
right.
out. But hopefully the magazine will be coming out a little bit earlier each month, but we'll see. Because it's really important to, you know, for this community to really work together, we've got to know what's going on. And so basically, if you just send it to us, jack@queervoices.org, simply email us what's going on, and we'll also try to check some of the listservs that's around the community to keep you updated.
We'll just try to. We always put a little time in for our community to make those kind of announcements of what's going on. So if you've got something, can't promise we'll get them all on, but if we don't have the information at all, you surely will not get it on. So do that.
And how about putting in a plug for a warm body?
A warm body?
Yeah, we need more volunteers to help out with the show.
Oh, okay. Yes. If you're interested in volunteering, to be an intern here with the show, again, contact Jack. at his email address, and we'll talk to you and see if you've got the what it takes to be part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's the folks in front of the microphone, and then there's those of us back here pushing the buttons, and we can always use people just for stuff like answering the phone and helping with the website.
There's the talent and there's the brains.
There you go.
The Houston Public Library also has a, I guess it's a queer sort of talk at the first Thursday of every month at 7
p.m. It's a whole program of GLBT speakers and events at the first of each month.
And this month, which would be the first Thursday in August, we'll be talking about the archives within the GLBT community, which we'll be doing an interview coming up shortly. It sounds really interesting. The last month in July, it was Maria Gonzalez was talking about queer theory. Which was very interesting. So hopefully they'll also be giving us a little bit more notice on what's coming up.
I think it's just remarkable that the Houston Public Library... That's just been rebuilt downtown is having GLBT studies, GLBT programs. I think that's remarkable. It says something about how far our city has come. Even though it's got a long way still to go, it has come a long way.
So, yes, and we have two different groups who are doing that within the community, the archives type thing. So I guess both groups are going to be representative at that speech. You know, the turnout hasn't been all that great. So, it's really... really need to support these organizations that are supporting what's going on in the community.
And now, when is this each month?
It's the first Thursday of each month at the downtown library at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
And parking is free after 6 p.m. Just make sure watch the signs of where it's legal to park.
Well, and the support it. You know, if you're downtown or if you're thinking about it, take a few moments. You can, I guess you can go to the Houston Public Library, and they probably have a list of the events.
Yes, they do. It's, Central Library, it's called, the downtown library, and it is on their website. So, we're also probably going to be preempted during the convention weeks.
Oh.
So we have to wait and see on that. Thank you for joining us. Do we know what's on next week?
Nope.
No. Well, are you going to thank the people that were on tonight, or you want us to do that? Well, there was...
Yeah, I'll grab a set of headphones here so I can do that.
Our poet, Donna Garrett, and Jim Shade joined us in the first hour about their event, the Christmas in July, this Friday at 6 p.m. And the address is 3838 North Shepherd. As well as Joan Devlin interviewed Paul Fisher with the book, and I don't have the name of that book in front of me. Brian Helbig interviewed Carrie Pope with Bering Omega and the programs they're offering. And then finally, Paul Hidalgo with SNAP, that Spay-Neuter Assistance Program. We talked about the animal aid program that SNAP does for HIV and AIDS people who have that, and to give discounted treatment and service to their pets, their animal friends. So this is Jennifer Renee,
Jack Falinski,
and Glenn Holt.
This is Queer Voices. Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston,
and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The Houston Press Music Awards Showcase, 60 bands, 10 stages. On Sunday, July 27th, starting at 4 p.m., sample the sounds of 60 local bands at Bayou Place and downtown. Stages include Hard Rock Cafe, Rock Bar, Mosaic, Live Sports Cafe, Flying Saucer, Venue, Butterfly High Lounge, Natsuo, Dean's, Havana Latin Bar and Grill, and The Real Sammy's. Wristbands are available at HoustonPress.com and at Cactus Music, and will also be available the day of the event. Listen to KPFT the week of July 20th to find out how to win a limited number of tickets to the Houston Press Music Awards. Start voting now for your favorite local acts using ballots available in the weekly issue of the Houston Press and online at HoustonPress.com. The Houston Press Music Awards Showcase is supported by Pacifica Radio, 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.